गणपति गुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्नुतिभिः सेदसादनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Let's just spend a few minutes meditation to draw our attention more within. Take a few deep breaths. Settling yourself into the stillness of the position. Quietly a few minutes. You can just watch the breath closely. You can see how the different thoughts sometimes bubble up in the mind, dissipate. All the different ideas, experiences come and go. They have as much hold on us as we let them, as we give importance to them. When I'm sitting quietly like this, easier just to notice. There's a continuous presence. I'm the continuous presence, which is the same regardless of what experience is arriving at this moment and what is going away at this moment. Like this quietly, let's just watch the breath a few minutes. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. So we're at verse 9, actually verse 10, sorry, verse 9 we did last time. Let's read verse 10. Mantra 10, actually, we call it. Vayur yathaiko bhuvanam pravishtaha rupam rupam pratirupo babhuva. I think you're all looking for the mantra. It's so you can find it. So verse 10, yeah? We'll start again. Vayur yathaiko bhuvanam pravishtaha rupam rupam pratirupo babhuva ekastatha sarvabhutantaratma rupam rupam pratirupo bahischa vayur yathaiko bhuvanam pravishtaha rupam rupam pratirupo babhuva ekastatha sarvabhutantaratma rupam rupam pratirupo bahischa. The one Atma, which is in all beings, assumes various forms in keeping with every form of being, just as one air element, which is in the universe, assumes various forms in keeping with every form of the object. It is outside also. So this mantra is identical to the previous one. The only difference is one said Agni and this one is saying Vayu. Otherwise, really saying the same thing. And what happens is in the interpretations they say that the previous verse is going to talk more about everything having one form. The one form, all the forms based on the one, talking about the rupa, like this. Every rupa belongs to the same substance, that all the ornaments are gold, like this. We're here. Here in Odisha where I am, then it's more silver. Yesterday we were at this jewelry shop. There's a silver jewelry shop and there's the gold jewelry shop, you know. You all here attending today are from India, so you're probably familiar with that because there it's silver. So yesterday we were at the silver shop, and of course right when I'm there, it comes to my mind. I see everything silver and they have all the different jewelry. Of course, they have many forms of Jagannath because Odisha. They also had a cross, I saw they have a cross there too, the different deities, but everything is silver, but the substance. Here, Vayu is taken interestingly in two ways, because on the one hand, it's the element, the base element. On the other hand, it also, Prana Vayu, they say, because the wind moves, and that's the energy. And we breathe, and that's the way, you know, the base way we have to get energy into our system. So it's seen in both of these. So here it's talking about prana. So prana is the kriya shakti. So now also all the action comes from this as well. So all the activity comes from the same one too. That's why we say the maya shakti is not one thing which when we look into Vedanta, we say, well, there's the God, there's right, the and there's the maya shakti. So we'll say, well, it seems like two things. Of course, when we get to absolute reality, nirguna brahman, there's no movement, no nothing, no action, no change. But the moment you take one step down, you say, well, there's the God and the maya shakti. So maya shakti, you'll say, now there seem to be two, like this. So what happens is, a nice explanation about this, how can it see, it seems to be two. Well, of course, we're in our dream, it seems to, when you're in your dream, you're doing things. Are you the character in the dream and you're doing things in the dream, two things? They're both they both just stem from your own mind. So it's not multiple things. The movie actor is doing all sorts of things. Whatever, depending on the type of movie, choose the genre, that type of activity. Comedy movies are doing some comic things and funny things like this. So the activity the actor is doing and the character is doing, the character itself, they're both all made from the same light. It's not multiple things. So though it seems like there is multiples, so the Maya Shakti doesn't stand on its own. It depends on the power of the character to do things in the movie, depend on the same light, on the same thing. So in this way. Now, when we take ourselves as individuals, we have different abilities. Those abilities don't stand on their own like this. Somebody is a very good orator. So you'll say they speak very well. Now, they're speaking well. Can you keep their speaking in one place and them in another place? Of course, nowadays we're recordings, but that's not them doing the action now. That's just some recording of a past thing. But when they're speaking, they have to be there. So they're there, the speaking depends on them. The speaking can go into a dormant place, now they're quiet, they're not talking. So you don't know that they're, you have no idea that they're going to be, that they speak very nicely, you have no idea. Then it comes out of them, they give a talk, very nice. Like I remember years ago, I think I was even some airport or something, and I was hearing, it was near election time, and I was hearing somebody speaking the TV. They're, wow, this person's speaking very well, who is this? And it was Barack Obama. I didn't know who Barack Obama was yet. You know, I heard the name once or twice before. Oh, somebody wants to run for president, blah, blah. Then I said, wow, this person speaks nicely. How would I know if I didn't hear him speak? So can that speaking power be separate from him? No. You don't say there's Barack Obama came and his speaking power is here too. No. So one is dependent on the other. It doesn't have separate existence. So that's why Maya Shakti does have a separate existence from the Saguna Brahma, from the manifest God, the God with gunas, with qualities, the creator, because there aren't multiple like this. So in any case, so here also the Vayu, if you take from the perspective of the air, the gas, yes, it takes all the form of anything you put into it, anything it goes into, but is it limited to that? That's not essentially it. It's the same one. It just manifests in that form. But in itself, it's a formless thing. So it'll take on just like the gold taking on the forms in this way. You can't. Yeah. And this is and actually one of the best meditations one can do. You could, board of Nididhyasanam and Vipassana. Is where you take the one energy in and through behind everything. There's one energy in and through behind everything like this. Because, you know, here I'm sitting and there's the light going on. There's the computer's plugged in. The fan isn't on, but it could be. So all of these are coming, the energy is coming from the same place. Then the neighbor's house and over there, just over here, their shop. So all the energy coming from the same place. Seeming many, but it's one source. So what's in living me? Energy in living me is in living you too. All living beings, same energies behind them. Then you have all the movement. The earth is rotating. All the planets are rotating. The whole universe, all this huge movement everywhere in the universe. One energy in them is behind everything. Came out of one place. So seeing it's one energy in and through behind everything, thinking about that, contemplating on that, then where's my separation? Where's my separation when it's like the wave thinking it's separate from the water? All the energy making it move and the substance it is coming from the same thing. So this is with the Vayu, such a very useful. And it's what's one reason why it manifests this way is Akasha is the subtlest, and Akasha we don't have a question about just being one. Vayu is the next one down, so it's going to be very subtle, and it will have some things that will be closer to the absolute. So actually, In Upasana, you could take Akasha very much like the Nirguna Brahman and Vayu like the Saguna Brahman, the manifest one like this, very interesting like this. So this is why it's looked at very closely. That's why in the Shanti Mantra, right? Namaste Vayu Tvameva Pratyaksham Brahmasi. See, the Vayu is such a wonderful pratika, such a wonderful such a wonderful thing that we can use to focus on, to think about the unity of everything. So this is what's talked about here, all the Kriya Shakti is also one. One thing, you can't see it as the multiple things. And just as presence, seeing an object and contemplating that, yes, this one, it's one presence is one thing, but then we're so caught up in the movement and the change. So to see the movement and change also as that is, you know, is a subtle thing to look at. So this is where looking at Vayu like this can be very helpful. So in this way, so these are just a few points, and both that the it's all coming from the same place. The power of something depends on the one who wields the power. So as I wield my speaking power, my walking power, etc., my thinking power, same way, the universal level, the God is wielding all the power like this. And then it's not separate from the God, just like as my powers aren't separate from me like this. It's not multiple things. Not Brahman and Maya. Maya is something dependent on, as my abilities are dependent on me. They can't stand without me like this. So this is how we see this. Otherwise, everything same like last time. And also, as we said last time, the end said, pratirupaha bahishcha, bahishcha. It's also outside of the forms. So it's the sat and the absolute existence is imminent in and through all the forms, but also transcendent. It's not limited to them. Is the water not limited to the waves, not limited to any form? Water is a formless thing. Put it in a form or not, it doesn't matter. It's the same substance. So in this way, with manifestation, with change, without, the same reality is there. So let's move to the next verse.
Suryo yatha sarvalokasya chakshuhu nalipyate chakshushair bahyadoshaihi ekastatha sarvabhutantaratma nalipyate lokadukhena bahyah. Suryo yatha sarvalokasya chakshuhu nalipyate chakshushair bahyadoshaihi ekastatha sarvabhutantaratma nalipyate lokadukhena bahyah.
Being transcendental, the one Atma which is in all beings is not affected by the sorrows of the world, just as the sun, the eye of the entire world, is not affected by the perceptual and external impurities. So then, what happens is, this mantra comes after the other two mantras because a doubt may come in somebody's mind. Okay, so there's the one Brahman in and through everything. The Atma behind everybody is the same consciousness. Very good. Now, if that's the case, then I have my own issues and problems. You know, I have some physical pain or this, or some, maybe some, whatever problems I have, my dukkham is here. Everybody, every manifest being will have dukkham, can't be without it. So I have some dukkham, then you have some, then our neighbors have some. How many billions of beings are there in the earth? So this consciousness behind everything, the right Paramatma, how much trouble is it going to have? my God, we just have to deal with this little bit. How will that one deal with all of this? This is a doubt somebody might have, that then the God is going to be troubled, so much troubled by all of this. So then what? So what happens, this is in order to refute that, to explain, look, it's not like that. You as Atma, as Sakshi, is not affected by the changes. It's not that you, because we, that's the whole thing, is our confusion. The whole viveka is to untangle the individual identity, body-mind complex, from Sakshi, from myself, the conscious being, like this. So on the universal scale, so each one of us, it seems, from my perspective, it seems that I'm this individual because of this misperception, anyonya adhyasa, I take some of the attributes of the conscious being, of Atma, and put it on the upadhis, on mind and body, and from the consciousness principle. And then I take some of the attributes of the upadhi, limited and changing, and put it on the Atma. So I make this confusion, and then it seems the Atma is suffering. But Atma isn't suffering. The mind is suffering. The mind is suffering. The body has some, brings some pain, etc. So the thing is, so Brahman is unaffected, asangata. It doesn't have any real connection to. Very much like if you watch the movie again, and the actor is there, and the actor goes through a whole lot of things and gets beat up. Always the star, the hero, is going to get beat up real, you know, badly sometime like this, right? Later they'll win, but first they need to go through some struggle. They have to do that somehow. So they'll do that, and you'll think after that scene, wow, he must be in so much pain. I wonder if he broke any bones in this. But nothing really. It was just pretend like this. Nothing really done, anything. So there's no scratch, nothing on the person. So seems to be. So the Brahman seems to be affected, but isn't. So the example they're giving here is very much what we've seen in Drikdrishya Viveka, which exactly this point, elaboration, this point is there. If you remember, the Sangarha Vakya, the first verse, gives the essence of it, and everything else expands on that in that text, which was Rupam, what was it? Rupam drishyam lok chanam drik tad drishya drik tu manasa drishya tu vishaya, what is it? Drishya tu vritaya sakshi drigeva natu drishyate. This is the verse. Haven't gone to for a while, so rusty there, but like this, that the eyes see the forms. Right? Forms are the object, the eyes are the subject. Now, what happens is there are changes in the forms, now I see you here. Then maybe later I'll be outside, I'll see everything here, right? The noisy roads and dust and too much garbage people throw in this. Then I'll go to a nicer place, say, oh, beautiful view, and this. The eyes aren't affected, they're the same. They just see the colors and forms. The colors and forms don't really affect the eyes. It's a separate thing. So in this way, this Drikdrishya Viveka says, well, then the mind sees the things from the senses. The mind is just information. It's not, you know, of course, emotionally, this were maybe I'm affected. Oh, I like this. I don't like that. But if I really observe, sense information comes in. I just observe it. Am I affected by it? Not really. So ultimately, Sakshi is not affected by anything. Sakshi, and everything comes and goes, Sakshi isn't touched by it. Because if it were touched, meaning you as Atma would change, you as Atma would change by everything, then you wouldn't always be the same person because there would be a change. If there's a tiny change, means that slowly, slowly, eventually, the whole thing is something different. Then you wouldn't be able to say, you wouldn't have the sense of a continuity of the same person. if everything were to change. Then if you look back, way, way back, childhood or something, it would look like a third person thing, not a first person, not me. You wouldn't feel constantly I'm there. So this is the point here, that Sakshi is always the same. You're always the same one. This is what happens. So here it gives it as the Surya as the example, because giving the elements and the nature. Suryaha yata sarvalokasya chakshuhu, the one eye, what illumines the whole world. The eyes illumine the colors and forms. So what illumines them externally is the sun, like this. Without the sunlight, there are no colors and forms for us. It illumines it. So just like the sun shines the light on everything, but now it shines the light on everything here, is it affected by what it shows here? The sun says, oh, that scene, I don't like that. Those people are doing bad things, or those people are arguing, or that place is very dirty, so I'm not happy with that. But this, I put a light, it's a very nice place. Very peaceful, very, very beautiful place. Oh, I'm very happy I'm putting my light over there. It's not affected, just throws light evenly everywhere like this. There's no differentiation. Dalipyate chakshushaihi bahyadoshaihi. The sun or the eyes, they're not affected by whatever blemishes there are in the object. It can't be affected because it's only illumining it. Sakshi illumines. Like this. So, ekaha tata sarva bhutantaratma, same way, the one atma in and through everybody is, so there is one, and nalipyate loka dukena bahyaha, it's not affected by the anything going on external like this, it's not touched by it. Now, here in the examples that are given, the light and the object are two separate things. This is what's given here. And to look at this closer, actually, one of the points that we brought up in some of our classes, especially in early on in Panchadashi, was one of the beautiful ways that Swami Paramarthanandaji explains about Sakshi, about consciousness, which is such a useful thing, saying that just like the light on the hand, because this is also sunlight, talking about that. Like he said, the light on the hand, it's not a part of the hand, not a product of the hand, right? Not a process from the hand, nothing like this. And it's a separate entity that illumines the hand. Second point. Third is, it's that the light is not limited to the hand, right? You see my face, you see the clock, not limited to the hand. And then if the hand isn't there, then the light doesn't cease to be. It just can't, it just doesn't have the upadhi of the hand for you to see its reflection. If nothing else was illumined here, just the hand, I took the hand away, so you wouldn't see the sun, light maybe. Doesn't mean the light is gone, just it doesn't have a reflecting media for you to see it. So it doesn't cease to exist when the hand is taken away. So this way, he says, the consciousness is not a part, product, or property of the body. I'm conscious. Is it a part of the body? Where is it in the body? Is it a product? Like scientists are trying to find consciousness being something in the brain. They may find one day certain areas in the brain, something where they say, here, you know, okay, must be here. But that will be, it's like finding here in the radio is where it's getting the signal. Maybe they'll find some of this, but who knows? So you can't say it's or a process, you can't say it's like this. It's something separate which enlivens the body. Without that, without being a conscious being, how will you be, you know, alive, talking and everything and thinking? You have to be a conscious being. So it's something separate from these. And then it's not limited to the body. If it were limited to the body, it wouldn't be ekaha. What is ekaha tata sarvabhutantaratma? There's one atma, saying it's not possible. And if we're limited just to the body, then what would happen is when you withdraw in meditation or sleep, you'd still feel I'm only this much. But you don't feel that same sense of limitation, physical limitation, because only by identifying with the body you feel that sense of limitation. So that's why it's not limited to the boundaries of the body. And when the body's not there, then, you know, we can just contemplate on, if I don't think of the body, does that mean I'm not there? I'm there. You can't say it's not there. You'll say, I had a surgery, and during the surgery they gave anesthesia, so it was nothing. So how can it be that I was still there? Well, you know, there was nothing, meaning there was nothing for it to reflect in. But now you're back here, you were the same one then, same one now. It's just there was nothing for it to reflect in, so there's nothingness, that's all. So this is how this is looked at, but now one other thing with the asangatvam, with not being affected by any of the fear from Paramatma perspective, anything manifest, for myself as individual, if I look from the individual Atma, from all the things I have in the body, all the issues in the mind, and this, whatever comes and goes, why it's not touched by it. The other reason it's not touched is because it's the substance. So when you take the you take the gold, like my wife, she got anklets, and her old anklet broke. She forgot to bring it to the silver shop. Next time she'll bring it to the silver shop. She'll take the anklets and they'll make some sort of necklace out of it. She'll give to our granddaughter here because they'll make the necklace for the dance, or their dance, the Odissi dance. They use silver. Let's say they do that. Now, is the silver going to say, oh boy, I used to be on the feet and this. Now I'm very happy. Now I'm on somebody's neck, so I'm very happy. I have a nicer form. People will notice me more. From the silver perspective, the same substance, just the form changed, but the same substance exactly is there. It's untouched. How much silver is there? They actually weigh. They took the anklets, they weigh, accordingly they give the price. Same amount of silver, like this. The person selling there probably wants to sell this pair instead of that pair, will say, this is a better pair, this is nicer, prettier, probably because that one weighs, you know, 100 grams compared to the other one's 80 grams, they'll make 20% more, like this. Because they're looking from the silver perspective. How much silver is there? So the point is, so as the substance of everything, it's not touched by the name and form of everything. That's the other reason for asangata. One is because sakshi, and the other is because it is the substance itself. And the seeming changes of the substance, are they going to affect the substance? They're not going to change. They can't touch it. It's just that same thing. Like the rope, no matter, how does the snake affect the rope? Does it affect the rope in any way whatsoever? Nothing, the snake can't affect the rope because it's not at the same level of reality. It's just an idea. So it's just superimposition. I superimpose all the changes on changeless. But really, it's always the constant same thing. So this is this point here. Another important reason why asangata. The example given is the example of sakshi. But this we also have to remember, because any prakriya, any methodology used, will have some limitation. Because if you find a model that's exactly the same as the original, then it is the original. It's not different. So any model like this, so that's why when you talk about asangata, about being unaffected, unattached, then you have to also remember this point, that the model shows a great model. Sakshi is a great model, but also remember that beginning, when I start as Sakshi, I'm separate from the other thing, I'm the witnessing awareness. But then as you go further, then the other, whatever, as Sakshi observes something, in its light the things appear, And then as they appear more and more, the less have substance, then eventually see they depend on the same thing. So of course, the Upanishad will continue about this, because in order not to leave us hanging in the air like this. So in this way, so here in this verse actually, just talked about the asangata from perspective of sakshi. What I just brought up, that because it is the substance of everything, can be also interpreted from the next verse. You can say like this, because the Upanishad really wants to make everything clear, because that's the main thing, is that we hear some of these points, these explanations, but they're all just explanation. No explanation totally can point it out, but as it points out to clarify any misconceptions we can have about Atma. So each of these things helps here, that it's not affected. Now that it can't be separate from everything else, is going to have to be pointed out. So it'll have to point out from all the directions, so that there's we can't mistake it for something else, because that's the main thing, mistaking for something else. So let's see how it continues with that, like this. So next verse says like this. Nityo nityanam chetanash chetananam eko bahunam yo vidadhati kamam tamatmastham yen upashyamti dhiraha tesham shantihi shashvati netaresham nityo nityanam chetanaschetananam eko bahunam yo vidadhati kamam tamatmastham yenu pashyanti dhiraha tesham shanti shashvati netaresham.
Guruji?
Yes.
Well, Guruji, we have a different line in 12. Am I looking at the... It says, Eko Vasi Sarva Bhutana Ratma.
Oh, I skipped a verse, huh? Thank you. Okay. Let's see that one. I skipped one ahead. Okay, let's go back to read number 12. Sorry about that. I missed one. Eko vashi sarva bhutantaratma ekam rupam bahudhayah karoti tadatmastham yenu pashyanti dhiraha Teshan sukham shashvatam netaresham Eko vashi sarva bhutantaratma Ekam rupam bahudhayah karoti Tadatmastham yenu pashyanti dhiraha Teshan sukham shashvatam netaresham. So the non-dual Atma is in all beings, is the inner controller of all. Remaining in one form, it transforms itself into multiple form, in manifold forms. They are the discriminative ones who see that Atma dwelling in the body. They enjoy lasting happiness, not the others. Netaresham. So now, when you have the controller and controlled, because here says Vashi, the one who's controlling everything. One Atma is controlling everything. So the one model that people have about the controller is kind of like the king or the president. The king or president is sitting in one place in the capital, sitting comfortably in the morning having their coffee. And they say, okay, we want to do this, right? They give some rule like this. Like what is it, 100 years ago or less than that in Turkey. I think Ataturk, I think that was the name of the ruler. He said, okay, we're gonna start using Latin letters for our language. He decided. They had their own script. That was it. He had a powerful leader, finished. Just went and did it. They had to change. Or here in this country, the Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, right? A few years ago. He said, okay, from tomorrow, all the, what is it, 1,000 rupee notes have to be given in to exchange in the bank. After a week or two, they're useless. You can't use them. Finished. We're making new notes. So they decide now. Did he go around ever? So did the first ruler there go around to everybody's house, all the schools, say, hey, change the print in this? No. He didn't physically go around to each village and each town. And here, the Prime Minister also didn't go to all the banks and make sure they're doing this. Didn't do that. And he did it here, of course, he did it because so much illegal money, people get illegal without taxes. Now suddenly they have to declare it. So that's the move he did here. But in any case, the point here is that the Prime Minister or the President is sitting in one place. They give some rule and then others are going and doing it like this. So that's one model. So the God is sitting in the heaven and make some rules, and then somebody's attended, somebody's going to come and do things. But the God can just stay there and relax, right? That's why Lord Vishnu is lying down, enjoying, lying down, relaxing, and dreaming off, and just, okay, so we'll give some order. Once in a while will come when there's a big trouble will come. Otherwise, he'll just stay and relax there, right? Why bother? So this is Puranic idea, just because that's how we see things. But here, Vashi, one term that's used similar to this is antaryami, antaryami. It's the one, I think it's antahatishtati yamati saha, something like this. The one who controls from within. It's not sitting out there and controlling somehow. And actually, if you think about it, the electricity in this house right now, the actual power is sitting right here. The electricity is right here doing it. Electricity in your house, the actual electricity is there, right? It's not that the movement of the energy is right there. So it is controlled right from there, even though the source of it is somewhere else. You can think like this. But in any case here, it's not control from out, but the control is within you. Maybe another example can be given. You have the wind-up toy. You wind it up. Now it's running. The whole power to do it is within it. It's not sitting somewhere else. So yes, the one Atma controlling in and through everything, but it's not sitting somewhere else and controlling. Within. From within it's doing it. You're doing, you know, everything I'm doing right here. It's not the Atma that has to come from somewhere else and do it. Right here and now, the power is there to do it. But it's the same one behind it. It's not that it's a different one. Very interesting. So, again, our dream world is always the wonderful example for all these things. So in your dream, you're doing things. Now in your dream, there's somebody else there too. You're having a conversation with them, right? They're telling a joke and you're laughing at it. It's very funny. Now, that other person, who's controlling that one? It's being controlled. You'll say that person is independently doing. But it's the same one controlling that one is controlling you. It's not a different one. Very interesting. But in any case, this is the point, is that it's not that the somewhere else, it's right there. It's in and through everything. The water is in and through the whole ocean. So the power is in the wave. But where did the power come from the ocean? But it's within the wave. So the one power in living everything in you, through you, it's not sitting somewhere else. And actually, the interesting thing is, not sitting somewhere else, in your dream, one thing is controlling everything. Where is it? It's in and through everywhere in the dream. But where's the dream? The dream doesn't really exist. Isn't that very funny? So for that's why when you're in the dream, you'll say there's one power in and through all of this. How can it be? I don't see it. One conscious being in through behind, in and through this. How can I see it? Well, in the dream you can't. When you wake up, oh yeah, it didn't really have a substance. So really in the end, all these things, in the end, all these attributes we give to Atma afterwards are negated because it's just a superimposition anyway. So that's why every part of it comes from the same Atma, like that. Yes, I have some independence I'm doing in this because there's some power within me that's doing. Yes, very good. But that power is not limited just to you, really. How can that be? It's all, in the end, it's all going to, has to be totally, Vedanta is dismantling that all this is just superimposed on that one. So as long as I'm looking, thinking I'm an individual, I have to look at it from this way. Yes, there's a power in me doing, it's manifest within me, but it's not limited just here. But it's not that the power is somewhere else doing it. It's not that I need something else in order to enliven me. It's right here within me in this way. So very, very, very interesting. Here's another nice example for that. Might be a good example for that. Is everything works by the laws of nature. Nothing goes against the laws of nature. Like now we're talking, beginning of the class, about the weather, how weather is off in different places. It's just, it's laws of nature. Now, but what when you take and you have a terrarium, you close it, and in there you everything is balanced, that you don't, for a long time, you don't have to add anything because there are plants and whatever small animals in there, that it's a whole small ecosystem that it can sit for months or years without your intervening. It's self-sustained because the laws of nature are there. Are the laws of nature then coming from somewhere else and going into there? No, they're manifest there. It's working there. I'm digesting the food. Does the power to digest the food have to come from somewhere else? No, it's right there. So it's manifest in there, but it's not an independent thing. It's the same power that's in and through everything. So Swami Dayananji would always, he would like to point out very much, his point was that Ishvara is manifest in the laws of the universe. This is Ishvara's manifestation. The law itself is right there and there. It's right there. It's not that Ishvara is sitting somewhere and controlling it, but the law itself is showing that there's the one power behind. But because it's manifest there, it shows that it's being controlled just by that right there. You don't need something else to push your car. All the power is there. It's working, but the laws that are making it work are manifest everywhere. So it's not just, on the one hand, it's controlled from within. The other hand, it's a universal phenomenon, a universal principle, like this. So that's this with the Antaryami, the one controller in and through. So the one same power in and through everything doesn't have to sit there to push to make something work, but it's because it's manifest there, it'll work like that. So ekaha vashi sarvabhutan taratma, the one controller, is within every being. Within every being, the same one is behind, but as the inner controller, like this, not something imposed from outside like that. Ekam rupam bahudha yaha karoti, this one entity is, you know, is in the many, is one, the one in the many. Swami Shivananji liked to use the term unity and diversity. We see the unity and diversity. I see it in myself because I see I'm one being, right? I'm one being. I see unity in and through this. I don't think of it as multiple. Then somebody likes some sports team. Do they see the sports team as these and these people? No. Yeah, oh, this one playing, this one not playing. They see one team. They think of it as multiple things in some way, but still they say one. Somebody likes their country. It's multiple. They see one. I'm here in India. You're sitting in the United States now, right? What is uniting it? An idea that says it's one. It's multiple things, one. But there's one. I see one in it. So we know how to see one in many. We know how to do it. It's not that we don't. We do it all the time. Because actually, anything we take as a object, one thing, it's always multiple. Can you take something one? You know, space maybe is the only thing you'll take, but then you'll say there are objects in the space. So all this manyness, but we know how to see one in the many. So same way, if we take the totality, we have to see the one in the totality like this. But we do say universe, we do say there are universal laws, meaning that's something that's unifying, that there is the one behind. Because when we see the one in the many, we see something that is unifying them. Something that although there are differences, we see there's the one behind, right? You see some event, maybe sports event again, country that you live in or you identify with, you're happy for the, you see the team and you're thinking there that team that's playing is your, you see the country behind it. You see beyond those differences, just this one. So this same way, how can we not see that there's one thing unifying everything? It's so in this way. So one who sees like this, tam atmastam ye anupashyanti dhiraha, so one who sees this one atma, by the dhiraha, by the wise, or by those with fortitude to look into this. Then what happens is anupashyanti, they didn't say just pashyanti, they see, but anupashyanti, they see it according to what the Upanishad is pointing at. Anu is following, so following this vision of the Upanishads. Because what happens if I just come onto it, my own idea, there's a possibility that I will on my own somehow stumble across this. It's not that it's not possible. But most likely if an idea comes from my mind, it has to be born from my thoughts. My thoughts and my stamp and my idea is there. And so it's very hard not to hold on to it as my idea, like this. Because my idea then, because born from my mind, where did it come from? So that's why they say anupashyanti, according to what the Shruti has pointed out. Because then it's not my idea, my ego, what my guru has pointed out through Shastra, what Shastra is pointing out. So it points out then it's not me, the individual, thinking of it. This is an important thing, because otherwise very easy just to get sidetracked my ideas. Very, very easy. Here it's not that. I put that aside like this. And actually then in teaching the things, the confusions, the things that are misleading will be just because of the, kind of like when you listen to the radio, if a radio isn't tuning well, the program is fine, the transmission is fine. Just this is, you know, this radio doesn't have, can't fine tune enough to get the station for some reason. So the confusions that come through, oops, you guys froze. Are you still there? Yes. It froze for a moment, so I didn't know. So the confusions that may be conveyed will be because of the instrument. You know, the person who's talking about isn't clear enough, or, you know, can't explain well enough. Or when I hear, I'm not prepared enough, so some things aren't clear like this. There's the confusions, but the actual, what it's pointing out is that's what it is. So it points it very clearly. So anupashyanti, what they see according to what the Upanishad is pointing out, like this. And again, it's not the important thing, it's not just the concept the Upanishad is pointing out, because I can conceptually become a scholar and can explain technically everything explained in the main Upanishads, but it's what it's pointing to that's important, like this. That's why you'll have people that, you know, are illiterate, that have self-knowledge, very simple. Or you'll have, as Ramana Maharshi, when he was asked, he himself didn't sit and study Upanishads, but scholars came to him and asked him about it, and he explained to them because of his self, because he knew without how he understood what they're talking about. So when somebody asked him, how many Upanishads do I need to study to gain self-knowledge? So he said, well, how many mirrors do you need to see your face? So it points it out. like this. I just have to know it and learn how to look clearly. So this is why the anupashyanti, that looked according to this, not just their own idea like this. So that's why many of the Upanishads, who is the Rishi, we don't know. Some of them we know, but some we don't know because they don't sign their name, and it's not, the individual isn't the important thing, but the vision that is conveyed is the important thing here. And that's actually what a lot of people get lost in. You know, there's some guru bhakti, and that's understandable, but that's that eventually somebody has to look beyond that, because if I so much adore the guru, I can get caught up, first of all, I can get caught up in things that are to do with the personality and not with the essence. What the teachings are, this is the important thing. What the guru points out, this is the important thing. And of course, with the masters, we can see it, how it manifests in their life as well. Each one will manifest slightly differently because each individual is different. But how it manifests, then we can see it in the masters. That's the important thing. The specific, this is the guru's name. This is what how they like to do in this. Okay, at the beginning, somebody can be enchanted by that because it gives some, you know, it gives some inspiration. But then one has to look beyond that, or one just gets caught up in that. And then my guru is great, but that guru is not so great. And my guru is great now. One time I heard Swami Satchidanandaji talk, disciple Swami Shivananda. Because I was in the Shivananda Yoga Center in New York, and not too far away there was his organization, the Integral Yoga. So I went once and I heard him speak that they invited. So he had a beautiful point he gave. He said, today you give me the Guru Dham, and the tomorrow you call me Dham Guru. So meaning they get caught up in his personality. And then, instead of, and what the point is that they took him up as guru, they have to, okay, what is he teaching? That's what they have to look at. What is he pointing out? So then, but they get caught up in the personality, and today they liked it, tomorrow they don't like, so then. So like this. So what is the essence? That's, so the anupashyanti, go according to what is pointed out, what is taught. Shastra is pointed out by the guru, they look, and then by this they see. So this is how they, ye anupashyanti dhiraha, tesham sukham shashvatam netaresham, those are going to have the lasting contentment, lasting happiness, and not others. Because every other, all the, any type of happiness, any type of contentment that is dependent on something, no matter how great it is, how long it will last, as Nachiketas at the beginning of the Upanishad, when Lord Yama gave him a choice of literally anything he wants, then Nachiketa said, no matter how great, how much power you give me, how much joy you'll give me, whatever it is, no matter how much I can think of for eons, then when it comes to an end, it'll seem like it was momentary, and then what? So as long as it's happiness from something, because of something, like this, because certain chemicals in my brain, like this, it also is like that. Because in the end, it's like that. That's why people take substances for it. And probably we do. I remember there was one lady who came to our meditation class years ago in Berkeley. And and she started doing the meditation a certain amount of time every day. And I think it was after 30, she read about, after 30 minutes, the level of melatonin or serotonin in our brain changes. And I said, that's very interesting, because I know from years of practice that we would do 30 minutes meditation in the ashram, and I know that after 30 minutes, there's something that happens. Yes, usually like that. So again, that's dependent on, okay, if I meditate 30 minutes every day, yes, I get that. So it's nice, but again, it's a situation, a condition in the mind. Now, because now today, I have to get up early, I have to teach, so I can only meditate 15 minutes. Oh no, now today I won't be happy like that. Or my meditation's disturbed for some reason. So that's also conditional. So as long as it's due to something, but the only way something is always there if it's the innate nature of something. and that my nature is that. And again, it's not the experiential happiness, because experiential happiness is a state of mind. Just like the dukkham, before we talk about the dukkham, is a state of mind. It doesn't belong to atma. The experiential happiness, experiential contentment also is just a vritti, comes and goes. And we keep trying to get to things as vritti-based. Do I get cut off at all? I'm just wondering, because you freeze here and there a little bit. No? Okay, good, good. So, in any case, we won't have to worry about the connection from here, though it's good. None of the classes have been disconnected, so our connection here has become good. Now there's some fiber optic here, so not the same quality as US, but still pretty good quality. But in any case, as long as vritti-based means it's experiential, it's changing. But it reflects the contentment that I am, the unlimitedness that I am. That's why ananta and ananda are used, you know, for Satchidananda or Satyam Jnanam Ananta. Ananta or ananda, the unlimited or happiness, contentment. Because really, the less I feel limited, the more I feel now I can breathe freely, freshly. And now I don't feel, so I feel happier. So that's why deep sleep, ananda, unlimited. So they're used interchangeably here, because then it's not the, if I want to make an experience out of it, I'm going to limit it. Where when I own up to, then there isn't the problem of it. There isn't the, it's not the sukha-dukha cycle, the opposites, but what's beyond those two. So since experientially, if I want to make an experience out of it, then it'll be more like the sukham than the dukkham, of course. That's why ananda bliss is used. But the thing is, it can be very much misunderstood. People want to grab it as an experience. But it's my nature. I'm not limited in this, and then untouched by anything. So, you know, then I'm fulfilled. I am the fulfillment itself. So this is why this is given, and only this is the only way to really have it, because any other way, as we said, is going to be, you know, limited. It's not going to be constant there like this. So this is, let's see if any other important points here, like this. This is 13, right? No, 12. Interesting, in my notes. My notes must have gotten some of them confused like this. Yeah, my notes, the notes for number 12 should go with number 11. That's maybe also why I got confused a little bit like this. But in any case, so this is the essential point here. So this is another reason why titiksha is very important, because what happens is, as I go with my raga dvesha, then I want to get to a happier place, and I want to keep some other things away. I want to keep away from the things that I don't like, that aren't comfortable, and I want to get those that I like. Here, like right now, with government, we have one government in, we say, oh good, they're working towards things I like. Now other government coming in, I'll say they're doing things I don't like, or vice versa. And so constantly I'll have my ideas and it'll go back and forth. Titiksha, forbearance. I understand that as the manifest world, sukham will come, it will go, dukkham will come, it'll go, and I learn to see them with equanimity. Because otherwise I just get caught up in that, and it's a never-ending cycle. Samsara, never-ending cycle. When I forbear it, holding in and having steam coming out of my ears, but just sitting there comfortably like this, but trying to sit there comfortably, but just saying, yes, okay, something comes and it goes. I'm that sakshi, as we said before, it's not touching me. And other thing comes and goes, less and less, I'm dependent on the sukham being there and the dukkham not being there. I learned to have both. And no matter what you do in life, both will be there. This is the wonderful thing in the world. You can't have just one of them. So they'll both come. So learn, as we learn, just to accept both, not run from one to the other, run away from one, run after the other, then more and more, it'll be easier. Then the balance within me, the clarity is there, and then it's not just raga dvesha based. So this is how wonderful the world is built, where it will give those to us so we can learn from that. And then it's not that the contentment is contentment not due to a situation, but without, you know, with regardless of the situation. This one, Swamiji, he likes to say, the trick is you're not content, you're not happy because of your spouse or your children or this, but in spite of your spouse, your children, etc. Then you've gotten somewhere if you're content in spite of. Look that. So, in any case, a few thoughts on these verses and that other mantra which I tried to get to, but we had to backtrack because I went to the wrong one. We'll visit us next week. Om. Om. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So before we leave, if any questions, anything you want to bring up? If not, we can let Sasi Devi go to sleep. It's late over there. Very good. So then we'll be back in a week and a half, Thursday, back to a regular schedule in regular time zone for me. So I look forward to that.
Travel safely.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Om Om, keep well.